Wow, welcome.
Welcome
to Highway Diary, episode 141 with Andy Voigt.
Hello again.
Your
Hello.
Second appearance.
Yeah, it's very exciting.
Second time we had this exact same scenario.
Yeah, except the chair situation has improved tremendously for me.
Mm-hmm. We walked right in here. There's a nice leather chair. I was like, this guy looks like Joaquin Phoenix. If he gets anything other than the leather chair, he's going to...
I know, I'm going to flip out.
Freak the shit out.
Yeah, I'm going to make something incomprehensible.
That's what's important about being a really high paid actor is like when you freak out, it's like, no, you paid for that.
Yeah.
So like so. Deal with you my have, fucking art.
You have to make your freak out comparable to the amount you get paid for a film.
Yeah.
So, you know, Miley Cyrus's freak outs are, well, I don't know if she does films, so that's the wrong thing. But her freak outs have to be so big. Joaquin has to go to a certain place. Robert Downey Jr. is gonna have to drive a car off a cliff.
Right.
If he needs to freak out again.
Right, right.
That's all he can do.
So you're in grad school right now. You're getting your MFA in playwriting at the University of New Orleans. You are building sets.
I am. I just started working in the scene shop building sets for the play productions that are going on at UNO.
What are you learning? Are you a good carpenter? Because I know you're a man of the country.
Right. I'm not. I've been building sets for 9 years. You know, my theater company has been producing, we produce like over 30 plays, and pretty much every single one of those sets I've had a hand in, and I still am. You give me just the slightest amount of agency to do anything I want, I'm a failure.
Mm-hmm.
I can't make anything happen. I can cut mostly straight lines, but angles I freak out
so
on.
So like, what do they say, just like, hey, listen, we need this to look like Midtown Manhattan, go.
Well,
and
no,
that's as much as they give you?
They give me less than that. They're like, look, this board needs to go into this board, which then needs to go into that board, which then needs to be elevated X amount of feet. And so we just spend days and days looking at it, and we just don't know what to do. It's really bizarre, because I'm very good at sweeping.
Okay.
I'm very good at sweeping, and I feel like I have a good... game manager type personality for that place. You know, as in, I'm not the best at anything, but maybe I'm a good 6 across the board. And so that kind of consistency at least gives
you're an
me
everyman.
Fun.
You'll show up.
Yeah, I'll show up.
You'll play Romeo or Juliet.
Yeah, I'll do either.
You
and the friar.
I mean?
I will marry and make love to myself all on stage.
So that's your one man show.
Yeah, that's a good one.
It's exactly. called Romeo and Juliet, the autosexual crat.
Yeah, it's called Catholicism's Okay.
And it's like, you know, you're a Catholic, but you also are wrestling the fact that you want to jerk off your own wiener. So
yeah.
It's like the Romeo, the Capulets and the Montagues in your own mind.
And it's going to play even further, you know, because I took a lot of Renaissance classes last year. And the whole act of ejaculation in the Renaissance kills you. Each time you ejaculate in the Renaissance, you die a little bit.
A little bit.
So if you're going to have sex with this person, that means you're like, cool, I will do that, but I know that I'm going to lose 3 days, 5 days, however many days.
Right.
And so you have to factor that in jerking off, too.
Yeah.
It's like, cool, am I that lonely right now where I'm okay speeding up my death?
Usually, yes. And that's the thing, you have to count your cums, and you got to get a calendar, and you got to just make promises with yourself, like,
yeah.
Okay, well, I'm going to die, like, 9 months
earlier. You should
probably
try and, like, tie it into an exercise regimen of some kind, where it's like, cool, run, stop smoking. For every day you don't smoke a cigarette, you can jerk off, because then it's like you are balancing it out, because you're already killing yourself, so you stop smoking, you get some years back, and then you take them away again.
Do you smoke cigarettes?
I do, yeah.
Yeah, that's what you're struggling with right now. You're like, oh, how can I build sets and meditate after my failure of trying to build this fucking set without a cigarette?
No, it's okay. It's you know, UNO being a non-smoking campus is very helpful. You know, you can't really do it a whole lot unless you're on the third floor of a liberal arts building, and then you can just puff away, obviously.
Flick them right into
right,
the
yeah.
ecosystem.
Onto the guards' heads, you know. You're like, oh, that's my vape, sorry, it fell off. So yeah, I think I struggle with struggling with it. You know, I need to be more aware of the fact that I need to not do it.
Right.
You know, which is hard. And so, you know, even if you're like, cool, I'm gonna quit smoking, I'll just drink more beer or I'll just smoke more pot. it's like a little, it's just trading one vice for another.
Yeah.
And so that's not exactly healthy.
That's why I just smoke pot. Anyway, yeah. There's so many, do you find that in playwriting class that there is a very political correct culture, and do you feel like you have to change your work depending on who is this going to offend?
You know, I'd say in my playwriting class, we've been pretty lucky in terms of that sort of thing. Somebody presented a play last year, which was about a guy who felt really bad for reparations. And, I mean, he felt really bad for the plight of the African American. And he was trying to do his own part to pay it back. And so he becomes a sex slave to a black man. So that was a play that we read back then. And everyone was pretty open about it. And we were trying to, you know, understand. It's helpful when you use words like objective and things like that. Where it's like, as long as this person is trying to achieve something,
right,
we can buy a lot, excuse me, we can buy a lot more of what they're doing. So I find that it's brought up. We talk about it. It's not as politically correct as I think some places are here. So we're lucky. We have a lot of poets, too. And so they can access deep pain very quickly. And I sometimes think if you can access the deep pain, you can get past the political correctness.
But also I think that the only way to access the deep pain is to say those trigger words. You know, like if you're not talking in trigger words, then how are you getting anything done? And also, what's the point of, like, trigger words versus adjectives versus what you could find in a thesaurus? What? It's just some words represent some things, and if you want to accomplish a certain goal, then you got to use them. And
I guess it's like, what is the goal, right? And so can you, that's a bad analogy, but it's sports season, right? So like, can you win a baseball game without hitting home runs? You know, you can, right?
Right, right.
And so is your trigger word like your home run, where it's like, cool, I'm going to throw this bomb right here, right, and I'm going to get everybody pissed off. And if that's your goal, then of course, that's a great thing.
Yeah.
Is your goal to be like, I'm trying to explore this topic in order to bring some kind of new perspective on it, or some kind of constructive dialogue coming from another side? Because I think that's something that's pretty lost right now in these debates that are going on, is like people... I don't know, this is going to sound really bad, maybe, but like people who are members of quote unquote powerful group, there are things, you know, you're increasingly limited in what you can say because the ways that you did say things, the way you accessed information, the way you shared it was from a powerful perspective. You were like, I am in a group of people that is in charge right now, even if I don't know that I'm with a group of people that's in charge right now. And here's how I would interact in this situation. And unfortunately, somehow, I don't know if it's unfortunate, but the dialogue has changed, or the road to dialogue has altered pretty significantly, pretty quickly, I'd say. And so, like, some of the things that are just funny, or that you think are just funny, are no longer funny. And some of the, like, you know, I think that's why you like hanging out with, or I like hanging out with my parents sometimes. Because they'll just say something really, you know, and you're like, cool, well, somebody can still say it. I guess somebody can still do it.
But there's just, like, so many PC words now that are coming out. Like, you know, I think that there used to be three channels on television.
Yeah.
So there was either straight or, oh, my God, some people are gay.
Right.
Two channels. But now, with the internet, there's millions of channels. So now we're finding out demisexuals, pansexuals.
What is demisexual?
Demisexual is someone who's not attracted by anyone's appearance, only their emotion, the emotional connection.
Oh, cool. They That's how I've gotten girlfriends.
Derive love from... But it's like, yeah, well, isn't everybody a little bit demisexual? Like, yeah, you want to love them and think they're a good person when you're in a relationship. What does that even mean?
Yeah, that's... So.
But it's like, hey, respect my fucking niche, bro. Like, I'm a demisexual.
That seems a little, you know, it's a little hard because it's like, no one's... I mean, are people persecuted for their feelings inside? I guess so. I guess you are.
It's just, that's the thing. It's like, they want to be victimized in their own niche.
And pansexual is everybody. I just love everybody.
Yeah, and then the thing, they're like, no, we're not bisexual. Bi is two. You know, there's so much in between.
Oh, okay. So you're talking your people, you're transitioning people going one place to the other. You're talking.
If you're a man going to a lady, or a lady going to a man, boom, you got to catch them right in the middle, right in the sweet spot. Oh,
where those lines intersect.
And then you're pansexual. Well, technically, you're panorama.
Yeah, if you're pan, there is no intersection point, right? You can just go wherever you want.
Right.
As long as you stay on these lines, which mm-hmm. are infinite. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think, like, what other kind of people could they love?
Anyway.
I mean, love who you love.
Well, what about other kin? Because other kin are...
Oh, incest. Incest sexual.
What?
Other kin?
Yeah.
People who are related to people?
No.
What is kin?
Other kin is like, oh, my spirit animal. Like, I'm really like a wolf. That's why I wear a foxtail. You know, my other kin is a wolf. Like, yeah, sure, you look at me, I look like a person. That's just superficial.
That's a thing.
Actually a wolf.
Wow, really?
Watch me eat Cool Ranch Doritos. It's
so, like, every time
ridiculous.
I see somebody walking around with a foxtail or a raccoon tail or anything like that, a wolf tail.
Could be another kin. They're like a little feather in their cap. Oh, they're a falcon.
I'm a hawk.
Right.
Oh, I should start doing that. But, wow, really? Because, like,
this human body is superficial.
I've just seen, like, cute street punk girls wear tails mm-hmm. like that, and I just thought that was their thing, but they're actually...
Right.
Wow, that's cool.
There's a whole other genre. It's like a little piece of furry, like, flair.
Here's a question.
Go for it.
And you obviously know a lot more about this than I do. Other kin, are they only attracted to other kin? Can you have a spirit wolf and still be attracted to just some guy who works at Target?
But, like, if you were, like, a straight dude, and then you saw, like, a spirit, like a hot lady, but you're like, oh, that's all superficial. Like, are you actually a spirit frog? Because, like, a wolf can't fuck a frog. That's physiologically...
But a spirit wolf can maybe have sex with a spirit frog.
That's the thing. Is like, does their other kin have to match the animal that you're carrying around?
You know, I actually cite this film a lot when I'm talking about relationships of any kind. But did you ever see the movie Lady Hawk? With Rutger Hauer,
no.
Michelle Pfeiffer, and Matthew Broderick. It's a medieval, fantasy kind of... kind of film, and they, Rutger Hauer and Michelle Pfeiffer are lovers, but they have a curse placed on them, and in the day she's a hawk, and in the night he's a wolf, so they can never be together except on equinoxes and eclipses, and that's the only time that they can make love and kill the bishop who put them in the curse. So maybe it's something like that, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, the blood moon, whatever it is.
That's the only day you can get a boner on a blood moon? That's fucked.
If you're, I mean, I think
in
if
this
you're,
scenario.
If you're other kin, it's the only day you can spiritually make love to other kin spirit animals, maybe on a blood moon.
Whoa.
We can go up to the fifth floor. I'm sure there's a book we could find.
This just seems, to me, it kind of seems like Dungeons and Dragons for white guilt. You know what I mean?
I mean, tell me about that.
It's like, did you fat shame my other kin? Well, you lose 3 shield points of social justice warriors. You know, it's just like fucking ridiculous how much this jargon you got to shoot out.
You have interrupted a Bernie Sanders rally. You get 5 political points. You have upset the Ted Cruz political rally. You get 75 political points.
Oh, you're social construct magic has deteriorated in my heteronormative spells.
You have convinced 3 people to vote for Hillary Clinton. You get 5 political convincing points.
All right. Well, let's talk about writer's block.
Okay. Because
that's something that comes up. You got to constantly produce fiction, short stories, playwriting. You know, sometimes you're trying to give up cigarettes. You're haphazardly hammering things together, mm-hmm. sets together.
Yeah.
Writer's block.
It's weird, man. I kind of discovered this summer that I'm a little bit of an introvert, which I guess I've always sort of felt, but I've just accepted that about myself. And so I did a play, I directed a play called The Cradle Will Rock, which is this commie play from the 30s about Steel Town, USA. And it was 16 people, and it's basically an opera. And so everyone's singing the whole time, and everyone's moving the whole time. And it was like a 6-week process, and it went very well. It was a free show, so naturally people came. But at the end of it, I was very, very tired. Like, so tired, like, not like, oh, God, I'm depressed, but just like, wow, I really can't do anything tired. So I could just, like, watch It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia for about a week. On Netflix, which was wonderful for me, but a little distressing to my fiance, I think, to see me not doing anything. And so we got back to school, and it was just very hard for me to, like, engage in it again. Because theater's funny. Like, if you're in a play, it's very hard to write a play.
Mm-hmm.
You know? If you're in a play, you can write poems and things like that. Just things to keep your mind fluid. But when you're directing a play, it's very hard to do anything but direct a play. So when I started this year, yeah, I really had some tough time, like, getting everything going. We got rejected from 6x6, which is, like, the 10-minute play monthly thing here. It was about NASA. You know, so sometimes you get, like, prompts that don't make,
mm-hmm.
that don't do anything for you.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you find yourself, like, going down little avenues and trying to get something started. And it's very difficult. I think the best thing is just not to get upset about it. Like, you just can't get stressed out about it, because...
Do you have to, like, power through, and then do you find that you make your... Like, when you're... writer's blocked, and then you power through, do you write your worst stuff or your best stuff? You know what I mean?
That's a good question. You know, I think the best time I've ever had writing was a month. It was a month where I wrote a 10-minute play every day for a month. And I'd say about 3 of those plays are actually good. But, you know, so much about writing, I think, is a purging, where you're just sort of vomiting things onto a paper mm-hmm. for a while. And, like, good writers can parse through that vomit.
What do you need to binge on to purge?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, sometimes it helps if you've had, like, a traumatic experience. Like, you know, you read a story I wrote about the guy who got his car towed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that was after my car got towed.
Mm-hmm.
So I was in it. I was living it.
Traumatic.
I was there. Yeah,
and
exactly.
And then you see the bureaucracy.
Right. I'm trying to write about some family stories right now. Some kind of things that happened in my family's past. But they're incredibly depressing. So I'm trying to figure out how to make them not depressing. Because people don't like tragedies anymore. You know, I just don't think we're ready for that kind of cathartic purging, if you will.
I think, like, when your government is attacking another government for oil, it's very hard to muster the energy to cry at somebody's lesbian cancer story.
You know, I think it is hard because there's the personal and political. Like, and so much of this world right now is becoming a mixture of the two.
Right.
And you have these massive events going on, you know, and, like, we can talk about massive events. And,
like, shooting, Boston bombing.
Yeah, you have, like, so much bad stuff that's happening just in this world. Like, you know, we're not getting out of Afghanistan like we thought we were for two years.
Man, I read this story that the Iranian defense minister is trying to warn Americans that Obama's a clone. He's going, listen, he's a clone. I mean, that's what he's saying. Like, well, I don't know anything anymore. Like, you know, if Obama was a clone, like, it would make more sense to... Imagine if you're a super bank and you have to, like, every year you pay for bribes for politicians, right?
Okay,
the
yeah.
super banks are always
I'm going to give. I know I have $4 million.
Right. So, like, at a certain point, is it cheaper for you to buy a politician or to build one in a genetic laboratory?
I guess it's the ultimate difference between renting and owning a home.
Yeah.
You know,
they want to own that. They want to put a chip in its fucking head and then have it read the teleprompter that you write.
I guess the question is like, is your country going to be around long enough? You know what I mean? Like, it's mm-hmm. scary to buy a home in New Orleans because at any moment the flood could take it all away.
Right, right.
So, like, do you want to just own a U.S. president when at any moment World War III is going to start and we could be gone? Or are you betting that World War III is going to start and your country, by its geographic positioning, is going to last longer than everyone else's?
But also, you know, if someone assassinates Obama and you got 9 more in incubating, boom. All right, let's use the 5th one we have.
I guess you'd have to, like, well, yeah, that's, huh. I mean, there's a whole lot of spin that would be involved in that. So, like, if you have a clone president, you also, and no doubt the banks probably have this already, but... You have to control the media to a certain aspect to be like, oh, no, he's in intensive care. He's okay.
Right, right. Like, how many heart attacks did Cheney have? You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Well,
like, he's on, like, his 5th baby heart.
I think you're confusing clone with demon. Like, I think that's a little different. Like, demons yeah. just don't die. You
right,
know
right.
what I mean? Like, their spirits wither for a while, and then they possess a young woman, and, you know.
Like in Star Wars, Darth Vader. Like, he was kind of... His body was barely alive, but it had so many computers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was like 60% computer anyway.
Right, yeah.
So.
He could kind of go on for wherever, but, you know, even then he was always breathing really heavy. Right.
But it was always through a thing. But he had very intense magic powers.
He really did.
Speaking of magic powers, let's talk about Amazon. Wow. Amazon.com, the most magical site in the world. Because you know what? If you go on there right now, you can pick up a paperback copy of Andy Vaught's play, Robin Hood, Thief or brigard.
Thief, brigand.
Brigand.
Thief, brigand. Two words for thief.
Or you can get Theater of the Deranged 2 on Blu-ray, which is put out by Troma. That's a movie that I was in.
Oh, congratulations.
Wow, look at that. It became available October 13th on Blu-ray. Check it out on Amazon, Theater of the Deranged 2. Anyway, let's take a break. I gotta make a pee-pee. We were just talking about being a writer, getting a master's, how we've also gone from 3 channels on television to a million channels on the internet. What do you see your playwriting MFA translating with the age of the internet? Like, what is, how are you utilizing that? Are you worried about the internet? Are you worried about clones? Do you have techno fear or techno joy?
I think I definitely have techno fear. I mean, if you look, I mean, you can't see it on the radio, on the internet radio, but this is my phone.
Wow, that's a flip phone.
Yeah, so you can hear it.
So that's, I do flipping this. Out, open, you're just flopping it around.
Yeah. Do you want to see what phone it can do, though? Let's say we're having dinner, you and I, right?
Okay.
Where do you want to go to dinner?
Oh, let's go to Koshan.
I mean, I love Koshan, my favorite restaurant in the city. So we have this thing, and I'm like, Eric, I'll get it. Don't worry about it. But could you handle the tip? And you just say, yeah.
Oh, sure. I'll handle that.
Okay.
Too.
And then we look at the number, and it's, oh, it's like 170.50. And I'm like, oh, well, what do we do for that?
170.50.
Oh, hold on for a second. I have this thing. We'll just figure it out on my tip calculator.
Whoa, that flip phone technology.
Yeah. So that'll be cool if we do that.
I saw it was at 15%. Can you drop that down a little?
We're making plenty of money. So, yeah, I think I have a little bit of techno fear. Mm-hmm. I think so much about, I think that's a scary thing about theater, too, is so much of it is personal interface and, like, living, breathing things. And there is, like, movements now. People are, like, bringing more and more technology into the theater as an attempt to, like, try and...
Roboted cloned actors?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean...
How does Tom Cruise look so good these days?
You know, we were talking about him last night, and he should just do the sequel to Interview with a Vampire. He should do Lestat the Vampire.
Yeah.
Because he looks the same.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he's got that weird kind of Scientology energy coursing through him anyway.
Yeah.
So, I think that'll be good for him. But, you know, not like cloned actors, but, you know, like, you have projection screens or your sound effects get more and more intricate and things like that.
Put through a synthesizer.
So, I don't know. Sometimes I think, like, plays should be written where they are in such a format where literally everybody can do them. You know, like, you write a play in such a way that it doesn't matter who really picks it up. It's going to work out for them.
Right. It's not like, in the background, the projector now slides to a surgery.
Right. Yeah, totally. And it's not like, to do this, you have to be a genius and really access your depth. As opposed to, like, no, anybody can make this play work on some level. Which, I don't know if that's, might be a little too egalitarian. Where you're like, everybody should do this. But I think that's a problem with theater, too. It's like, you know, the internet and everything is so egalitarian. Maybe. But everybody has access to it.
But I guess what I'm saying is that we can spend all this money to get an MFA, and then we write a play like Robin Hood, Thief, Brigand, put it on Amazon, and then boom, people steal it. Boom, they're passing it around.
To steal it, they have to buy it. And so I can firmly say that not many people are stealing it, right?
At least one person.
Yeah, my mother might have stolen it. You know, I don't worry too much about it. I mean, that would be really interesting if that happened with this play.
File sharing,
or just like you pick it up and they're like, well, no one will ever know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think writers are vain enough people. Well, they'll Google themselves pretty consistently.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'll find out if somebody else is doing Robin Hood, Thief, Brigand rather quickly without paying you for it.
Yeah, it's weird. Well, that's why I also do stand-up, you know, because, like, I do screenwriting, but then, like, all the time I'm doing stand-up. And I was at this place called Legends Encore in Metairie, and it's like, man, they had a contest. And, like, the best stand-up would win $50 or get a $50 headline spot the next time they showed up, right? Whoa. Plus a steak.
That's good.
Right? So then I go, and then the judges said, oh, 4 people got perfect scores, and I was one of them, and then they narrowed it down, and I didn't win. So I'm going back next week. I want that fucking steak. I want that fucking $50.
Is that bar, like, kind of by that weird hotel that... Not the Space Needle.
Yes, it is, yeah.
Okay, I've been in that kitchen. You don't want that steak.
I don't want that steak?
You don't want that steak.
What are you talking
about? I've been in that kitchen before. I've gutted fish in that kitchen before. And it's, it was not great when I was there last time. New management, maybe, I don't know.
Wow.
I'm just saying, might want to think about that steak.
I'll take it. I'll take the fucking steak. It looked good.
All right, man.
You have a real fiance, you assured me.
Yeah, she exists. She totally exists. She's in San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
She's getting her MFA in directing at UCSD. She's got one more year. We've been together for a long time now.
Is this your second year?
Of engagement or of school?
MFA.
Of yeah. MFA.
Yeah. Yeah, you start when I started.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we're the same. We're going to graduate together.
Beautiful.
Down the aisle. Down the aisle.
Speaking of which, you have a real fiance in San Diego getting her MFA. Are you going to get your collective MFAs and then rejoin each other?
I think she's planning on coming back here. It seems like, because she was here before she left. People tend to really like New Orleans. Theater people love New Orleans. And she was working with Cripple Creek, our company. She was in there pretty much since the beginning. She was in our second show and has been a part of every show since then, most every show.
So you met her in New Orleans.
I met her at an audition.
When you were the big boss.
When I was, you know.
You were behind the desk. And
cute little girl walks into my office.
She wanted something from you. She's like, I want to be a big star. You're like, you'll be a big star.
Yeah, baby, I'll get you a big star.
You'll be a big star.
Yeah, that's pretty much how it went down. I didn't deliver.
You'll be a big star.
I don't have a couch. So she's in directing right now. She's a very good actress and a very good director. Her name is Emily. Pretty. She's a pretty girl. And I think she was here 2 weekends ago because I officiated a wedding of one of our dear friends.
Mm.
And so she was one of the maids of honor in the wedding. Or bridesmaids.
It's like, it was meant to be. If she's showing up around you as a bridesmaid and as a hungry actress, it's like,
right,
boom,
yeah.
You will always put yourself in the power position.
Right.
Oh, you want to officiate this? Oh, you want to get married? Ooh, well, I'm the marrier on this. Oh, you want to be the play? Ooh, but I'm the director. Come here, baby.
I think I need to cultivate that whole persona a little bit.
You need
bit
to
more.
Write, like, a book about, like, you know, how to pick up theater poon, you know?
Oh, well, I only have the one, you know what I mean?
Well,
I mean,
flush it out.
How to marry.
How is that applicable to other people, though?
Oh, that's true. Just be the boss.
Yeah.
Just be the boss all the time.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I got a little mucus on your face.
Emphysema. So don't quit smoking.
Got to keep the oven hot and churning at all times.
Let's do that again. More kissing.
Are you an officiant? It seems like you might be a person who has their officiating license.
I think I applied to be a priest on the Universal Life Church, which that involves sending them your email, and then they're like, you can officiate weddings, and you're a priest at the Universal Life Church.
Yeah, that's what I am.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
what were you hoping for? I mean,
I just wanted to get the credentials in case.
Do you have the credentials?
I had them. I got them when I was like 16 because my friend was like, oh, yeah, I can officiate weddings, like bragging about it. And I was like, how do you do that?
Okay, so you
like, I sent my email.
Well,
like,
it's nice to meet a brother in the monastery.
I know, right?
Always is. You know, I think there's a lot of us. I think we should get together. We might be a pretty powerful group.
A meetup group?
Yeah, a meetup group, a little flash mob, a little officiating flash mob. We all just meet in Grand Central Station.
But that's the thing about being a Universal Life Church marriage officiator. It's like, because there was such a low bar, that people won't really show up to a meeting unless it's a wedding that they get to be. You know what I mean?
Well, look, you don't know that. I mean, I don't think that you email other people in the Life Church, do you? I mean,
mm-mm.
You didn't know I was one, and I've officiated 2 weddings.
What?
Yeah, 2. So
you're printing out those credentials to get them fresh
for
the wedding?
Well, all you need is a certificate. I mean, you don't need, like, the little... I mean, I'm thinking about getting the parking sticker, so, like, people will not put a... I mean, not New Orleans, they'll take it anybody, right? They'll take it Jesus.
If you get to be a professor, you should put your degrees in up above you, plus your Universal Life Church one, you know.
I'm thinking about getting a PhD after this year. So, what is it, like Reverend Dr. Vaught?
Mm.
Is it Dr. Reverend? What sounds better? I think Reverend Doctor.
What's your, you're going to get your doctorate in playwriting?
No, I think I'm probably going to get a Renaissance studies.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. I might try and go to England. They have some good programs over there.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, that was just the jazziest one. You know, my favorite professor here is Catherine Loomis. Have you ever read Catherine Loomis?
No.
Whew. Take a class with Catherine Loomis.
Yeah.
She scares the hell out of you.
Yeah.
But it's so nice to have, like, the fear of God in you here. Where you're like, you're going to do this. And you're going to do it great. Or I'm going to yell at you. And I won't talk to you. And then, like, if a phone rings in her class, ooh, throw it out the window. Because you will get yelled at. If you come in late, don't come. It's very strict. But she's one of those, she's a real genius. And so for whatever reason, she really stoked a love of early modern culture for me.
Yeah, that she has that, like, Dark Ages Renaissance, like, you're going to hell and life is going to be brutal.
Right.
Mentality.
Well, we were talking about the ejaculation stuff earlier.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's what I learned.
How many times did you come in her class, and how many did you good come problem. So many? Good. Like, fear comes so many times that it's like you lost 2 months off your life.
Well, you know, I missed a couple of days, so. I think that might be a problem.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it was exciting. And some of the poetry you read, there's this one poem by this guy named Robert Herrick. And I'm sure your audience just can't wait to hear about Renaissance poetry, erotic Renaissance poetry. But it's like, the poem is called The Vine, and it's, I'm paraphrasing, but it's like, hey girl, last night I dreamed that my penis was a vine, and it grew all over the place, and it started stroking you all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
And then I woke up, and I had a boner. The end. That was the poem. And it's a great point, but
yeah.
You know, you think about things happening like that now. You couldn't do that now.
Yeah.
You don't have the language to do that now.
That's the thing. It's like with trigger words, you know, if a hot girl in class ever says the word inappropriate, I'm going to get a boner. That's my involuntary reaction. Okay, that's my trigger word for a boner.
Is it like the two P's together? What makes
that's inappropriate? It's like, oh, I'm right where I should be right now. You know?
Yeah.
Hey, you would have worked in your theater. So what I'm saying is, but it's like that boner. I think in my real head is like my fault. You know? So it's like
because
people.
You...
So if you use a word that offends people. People are like, oh, me being offended, that's important. So let me make it so that I'm never offended anymore.
But are you offended that you have? Are you like, how dare you turn me on right now?
No, I'm saying trigger words are real.
Because I think you need to take that perspective, where it's like, you need to stop causing me to be erect in class. That's rude.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know if you can do that, but it seems like that's the path of least resistance.
Yeah.
So, like, own your own trigger word.
And I like how your hand did a boner as you.
Yeah.
Path of least resistance. You know what I mean? Yeah, my other Ken Wolfcock just gets real hard.
Oh, yeah, I bet, dude.
It's like, you know, I can't control it. My wolf is crazy.
Well, one, it's your spirit, right? So that goes everywhere. And two, it's a wolf.
Yeah.
Try taming a wolf.
Good luck.
Yeah, it doesn't work out.
Yeah.
Ever.
I'm a wild wolf, hot girl. Stop saying inappropriate.
Oh, man, that's good.
You have fiction class with the chairman of the board. He's the big wig around here.
He is, yeah.
Neil. He is the teacher, the dean of the liberal arts school.
Is he really the dean?
I think he's higher than that. He might even be the president.
Archdean.
Mm-hmm. He's a doctor, reverend.
Reverend doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How is it like taking classes with the big boss in fiction?
Well, he did not enjoy the story that I put out this past time. But again,
how do you let you know?
He said, I did not like this story. And I enjoy his class, though. He does a lot of enthusiasm. And his enthusiasm you really feel. So that's really cool. And I think his ideas about stories are pretty good. I'm ashamed to say I need to read his stories. I haven't read them. So I can't really speak to his level versus mine, other than he knows what he's doing a lot more than I do, definitely. He's very funny. He likes to talk about football a lot. He lets you smoke. Not in class, obviously. That would be pretty neat.
In the break.
Yeah, in the break, because he smokes too. I don't want to ruin him.
Right.
But yeah, I think he's got really funny ideas. He keeps it light. He makes a safe space for failure, because we've all been kind of blowing it recently in his class. And yet his optimism is nice. would say.
I think you have to have several failures to be a writer. That's what it is.
Yeah, I think so.
It's like you might have like two or three good plays in you that are like the best ever.
Right.
All your other ones are going to fall somewhere shy of good.
Right, yeah. I think that's true. At least I hope so.
Because... like, you know, if I do like 8 stand-up albums, you know what I mean, in my lifetime, realistically, 2 are going to be good.
Right.
The rest are going to be dog shit.
Yeah, I think that's true. Hey, you want to be a
hey, stage. You want to be
you
a stand-up
You
got to
do a failure every once in a while. Neil drinks a lot of water in class, which I admire.
Does he pee a lot?
No. No, he really keeps it together.
He keeps in there.
Yeah.
See, I just have the worst bladder. I think before I moved to New Orleans, I was living in Los Angeles, and one of my jobs was this desk job at this place called Deluxe Digital. And I hated it so much that I would, like, every time I would have to pee a little bit. Yeah, I would be, like, 15 minutes away from my fucking desk so I don't shoot myself. And so now it's like I've trained myself to have zero bladder.
Oh, right.
You know?
That's a bummer. That's a real bummer.
I gotta change occupations where, like, long...
You should come work in the scene shop, you know what I mean?
The scene shop.
And I pee a lot in the scene shop, too. But I drink... You know, I try and drink... What I have, like, one of the smart water bottles, which is, like, 3 liters, I guess. I don't know what it is. But I try to drink about 3 of those a day. And so you have to pee a lot when you do that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know... And it's cold in that scene shop, too. It's very chilly.
Just a lot of AC.
Yeah. It's just like a little warehouse, you know what I mean? And as things get colder, it gets colder.
But how much of your time, let's say there's 8 hours, how much of the time is standing around going, I have no idea what to do with that piece of fucking plywood?
I'd say I work 4 hours, 4 hours a shift. 45 minutes to an hour is definitely. That's what I do. That's my move, right? I go like this.
Right. Well, you got the beard. You
right, yeah, I can do this. Right, I just got a beard trim, thankfully, because it was getting a little too, you know, like it went past Confederate General and it just went back. It went to like Civil War denier or whatever. Mm-hmm.
How heteronormative.
Right. So I would do that. Nathan, who you met... Who gave you an Uber ride?
Yes, I gave him an Uber ride.
Oh, yeah.
That's not a euphemism, right? I gave him an Uber ride.
Do you like Ubering?
It's okay.
Yeah? How much do you do it?
I do it when I can.
Is it just like, okay, I feel like Ubering for the next 50 minutes, click?
It could be like 4 hours every day, though. Or it could be 10 hours when there's a football game or, you know.
I mean, do you plan when there's like, on like Halloween, are you going to be working? Are you going to be trying to make that
That's
money?
That's tricky because Halloween's my birthday.
Oh, congratulations.
I
That's
turned
a great
30.
Birthday.
Cheers. Awesome. Yeah, I'm turning 30 on Halloween. So I think, but the thing is like Halloween, I can make like $300 in like 7 hours. So maybe I'll just do that.
And if you put...
especially in New Orleans,
if you pinned a dollar onto your shirt,
yeah,
like you would make bank.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I guess it's like, do you go from the hours of like... Maybe you start early, right? Maybe you help people get where they have to go. And
no,
you don't
no,
necessarily...
I would probably start at 4 p.m. and work to like 3 a.m.
Oh, wow, so you'd be just doing it the whole time.
Yeah, but I would make like my money for the month. Like, when holidays happen, with surge pricing and stuff, you know, if every ride is 4.5 times what it's supposed to be, you know what I mean? And they're going off like fucking fireworks on your phone.
Do you think, I mean, I guess there's no sign that says Uber, obviously. But, like, when you are Ubering somebody, do you find that a cab driver will, like, get a little close to you? And, like, look in there?
It's just not how, sometimes they'll kind of cut you off. There's the one loop of the Hilton Riverside. They have a big old circle. And
the Winston Churchill statue.
Yeah. And so there's all these taxis lined up there. And when I just cut in front of the line because someone's already ordered exactly my car, the taxis are like, what the fuck? But it's like, no, that person ordered me. I have to go there. And then they jump right in the car and then I speed away. And then I could kind of feel like, they might cut you off in that circle.
Right.
But other than that, I really don't have any problems just because the system is so... I mean, someone orders the car, you go pick them up, they're waiting exactly for you.
Yeah.
They see my big beard in a picture.
Right. They know it's you. Mm-hmm. They trust you.
Mm-hmm.
They trust you. Okay. I guess it's like you're not taking, you're kind of taking their job away, but they're kind of dicks. But so if somebody calls for you, they're like, I want Eric Hollerback to pick me
No,
up.
because I'm the closest one. Whenever you order Uber, whoever's the closest driver starts making their way to you.
So when you're off, when you're like, you just dropped off the sexy woman in the red dress,
Sure.
you feel like your whole night's about to get a little
She
too
said
noir.
inappropriate 9 times during the ride.
Right, yeah. You think maybe she's in some trouble that you're going to have to help her out of at a later date. And you're just, what do? You go to the coffee shop, you hang out, you drive around aimlessly, you get a chili dog at the gas station. Like, what is it? What do you do?
Well, I like to bring all my own food for the day, first of all.
Smart.
So that I make my food in the morning, so I have like two like nice like chicken and bacon burritos or something that I make for myself in the morning, so it's like good
Got a
fucking
little
food.
cooler right there. Put a
I
little
just
ice
put
in
it in the side
it.
compartment.
Okay, you just let it room temperature.
Well, I have it at I have cold seltzer waters in there as well. So the cold seltzer water keeps my sandwich nice and cold, keeps
And
everything
I guess with a
from
burrito, you don't want it to
spoiling.
get too cold. Like, you kind of want it that it's coming down, but it's still
Right,
fresh.
exactly. So, that's basically how you do it. You stay out there. As soon as you drop off the lady in the red dress, maybe you're in a really good location. Maybe you're right around Tulane. Tulane people have money. They order Uber rides. It's like gangbusters. They're like, oh, I heard about this bar in Lakeview. Boom, I'll drive a Tulane person back up to Lakeview. $25. Boom, boom, boom. Wherever you drop someone off, you try to pick up right around there. That's how you stay as efficient as possible.
Right, yeah, one place to the next. I guess so. All right, it seems like you know what you're doing.
There's not a lot of. If you want, if you don't have Uber and you want to get Uber, if you're a first-time rider, you can get $20 free, and that's if you get the app and then type in the promo code XDM2MUE. Type in the promo code XDM2MUE and start with 20 free dollars of Uber.
That's not inappropriate.
Whoa, that's my boner word. Even if you. So, whoever's closest to you will start picking you up if you're in New Orleans or wherever the hell you are. We have listeners in Croatia.
Oh,
We have
yeah.
listeners in. It's probably four listeners in Croatia. Some in Germany. Some in the UK. Some in Australia. So,
That's
that's cool.
awesome. That's really awesome.
It's awesome on the map, the ratings map. It always shows like all the countries. I think number two is Germany. So,
What's number one in the US?
U.S.
Oh,
obviously,
okay.
U.S. Actually, probably Canada, Germany, U.K., Australia, Croatia is like in the top six. And I was like, Croatia, big podcast fans. Hell yeah.
Oh, that's nice. That's
So we're probably reaching just about the end of what our segment here. It seemed
nice.
we had some
Great. I
fun.
really enjoyed this one. You know what I mean? It's nice to come back in here. It's nice to talk a little bit deeper about things.
So what are you what was your best play, do you think you wrote when you wrote Robin Hood, Thief, Brigand?
That's a hard word.
Brigand.
Yeah.
What are you trying to say about today's world via Robin Hood?
Well, Robin Hood in this one, at the beginning, they steal essentially the king's ransom. And instead, the normal Robin Hood legends, he works very hard to bring the king back. So Robin Hood robs from the rich and and gives to the poor in order to reestablish the social status quo. And this one, he's not. He's actually trying to break it to bits. But when they steal this ransom, they steal 100,000 gold coins. They give it all away. And you can't give that much money away to people without somebody noticing. So the queen comes in and King John comes in, and they're both trying to get to Robin Hood. And so Robin Hood winds up working for the Queen of England. He's like forced into her servitude. So it's a little bit about like why we do what we do, and what does it mean to be a leader? Why do we listen to the people who are in charge anyway? What about them makes us say, oh, you're that person? With the king, it's just like, well, he's the king. What else are you going to do?
Right.
And
He
so.
was born into that. He's got special blood. I think kings and queens with like bloodlines is the most racist possible thing. Not only, you're saying that person, their blood is better than your blood. How much more racist can you get? That king didn't earn his spot through getting a perfect SAT score, through graduating 4.0 from MIT. They didn't do anything.
And his daddy just got it from his daddy. Maybe. Sometimes they kill other people.
That was the most privileged do-nothing fuck in the entire world at the time. They earned none of what they did. Most privileged do-nothing shit.
Well, it's always funny when you think about what people were able to, like, pass off. You know, it's like, my blood is better than your blood. Okay. My God is better than your God. Okay. I own this dirt. Okay. Yeah, sure.
Let me farm your dirt for you and feed you from what you own.
And let me pay you to do that.
Yeah.
You know, the things that people have passed off on people to control them is pretty frightening.
Yeah. And then in your play, it's like, oh, no, now my servants have too much money. So they're slacking on their job because they're enjoying their life a little bit for the first time ever.
Right, and it's like the upper class who have no idea really how feudalism is supposed to work. You know, they lose more and more money while the poor get richer and richer.
Right.
So it's like writ large.
The poor also know how to hustle, which is what the rich never learn.
Right, that's true. So even if they get that money, they're going to continue to do the sneaky things that they did in order to exist.
Where do you think this country is going? Because we own, let's blow this out. We owe like 99% of our GDP to China right now, who bought all of our debt. Now they can just come in, buy our universities, buy our everything, you know what I mean? So it's like then they can be the head honcho and then we can, what's going on? Do you know anything about politics?
I mean, I try and follow. You know, I watch the highlights in the Democratic debate and things like
that. Yeah, they're all clones. Oh, by the way. What's really going on here?
Well, I think that's interesting about China. I didn't know they owned that much of our debt, but I'm sure they own a lot. So, yeah, they'll take us. But I think more or less people here want them to take us. If you look at, like, where the jobs have gone, where all of our shit is made. Like, we would just as soon have China make all that stuff and do all that stuff and let us kind of like coast a little bit.
So you're saying like we're happy having China make all the things that we buy for cheap in Walmart with debt?
Well, I think the people who benefit from it, you know what I mean? Because there are people who still make money even though China owns everything.
Right.
You know, and so those people are fine. And I think those people are not too concerned about whatever kind of wage slavery the rest of the country gets brought into. I don't think they were before. I don't think they are now. I don't think they're concerned.
You know that the Walmart family owns like all so many like underground bunkers in Colorado.
Oh, really?
Colorado,
like
Denver.
All the NORAD stuff?
Like in Denver, like underground bunkers that are like luxury mansions with like servants as well in them.
Can you imagine bunkers. Like that's your life? It's like being a servant at some dude's underground bunker that he never goes to, but you just have to be on call all the time.
Just like making sandwiches that rot.
It's like at 12:05 PM every day you will have a bologna and lettuce sandwich for me. I don't care if I'm there or not.
Right.
That's horrifying. So I think that could definitely happen. I wonder, you know, we had this gun debate now, forever. I don't know if that's going to blow up or not. It seems like things are edging closer to, like, fissures in the world. Mm. You know, the race fissure that's happening right now, the class fissure. The fact that the race and the class fissure can't get together about, like, no, this is affecting both of us. And then, like, there's people who, like, I'll never give up my gun ever as long as I live. And what's funny is, like, the minute, like, let's say they pass a law tomorrow, where they're like, there is no such thing as automatic. You cannot own an automatic weapon anymore. The people with the automatic weapons, or a large number of them, will not give them up, right? And the reason that these people have their guns is because they are afraid that the government is going to come and take them from them. And so they don't want to give that up. So that's going to become a self-fulfilling prophecy, where it's like, guns are made illegal, now we have to come and take the guns from the people who are so sure that we have to take the guns from them.
Yeah. See, I think about the gun debate as I think about Prohibition, because when Prohibition was enacted, people drank more. When you said to all of America, you can't drink. Well, then every person was drinking a liter and a half of booze per day during the Prohibition. Before, it was probably like,
I'll have a cup of wine
once a week.
Yeah.
You tell me I can't drink? Let me have a fucking liter and a third per day.
Right, because that's...
off the fucking charts. That's a wine bottle and a half every day for every American during the Prohibition. If you make guns illegal, and what happened during the Prohibition? The mobsters started getting rich, mm-hmm. selling illegal booze. If you make guns illegal, the same thing's going to happen with guns. Now, it's going to be illegal. People are going to want guns. They're going to sell illegal guns. Mobsters are going to get rich with illegal guns.
I think that's already happening, right? Like, I mean, problem is, like, there's... I mean, I guess you can get guns legally. You can. But, like, I still think a lot of people must... I mean, all these gangsters on the street, maybe they get them legally, but I feel like this all comes from somewhere else. There's arms dealers that just give guns to everybody. But that would be really scary. I think we should just be like, look, no guns. Everyone has a sword. Like, just let everyone carry a sword.
Is that why you want your medieval PhD?
So I can carry a sword? Yeah. Just once you become a reverend doctor in Renaissance studies, they give you...
They knight you.
They give you a broadsword?
Yeah.
That would be great. That would be great. Sir Reverend Dr. Vaught? I mean...
I'm the round table.
You guys want to sit in the round table?
You
want to
see shit. My servants started getting wealthy, so my turkey sucks today.
So I cut their feet off, but now they can't cook anything because they bled to death.
Do you want your feet?
I'm what they call a benevolent dictator.
Good times.
Yeah, good times.
This has been another episode of Highway Motherfucking Diary of the Bag, episode 141, Andy Vaught, number 2.
Pleasure, sir.
Pleasure. All right. Later.